Fear Channel, taking over the airwaves.
Well, the function of the media has never been to eliminate the evils of the world. Their job is to persuade us to accept those evils and get used to living with them. You got a match?
Fear Channel, taking over your mind.
We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own.
Fear Channel. Corporate terror at its best.
After they've consumed every natural resource, they move on.
Fear Channel. 24 hours a day.
Resistance is futile.
Fear Channel.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of WEFT-FM, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the Weft Associates. And now here is this week's edition of IMC Radio News.
Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
Hello and welcome to IMC Radio News. This week we've got a syndicated show out of Canada called Auntie Bee's Knees, a report back from a benefit show held for the IMC last week at Espresso Royale Cafe, and the PR Watch weekly radio spin. But first, headlines. After more than a year of complaints by U.S. anti-war activists that they were being unfairly targeted by airport security, Washington admits to a list, the Independent reports, of hundreds or even thousands of names long of people it deems worthy of special scrutiny at airports. It is impossible to know for sure who might be on the list or why, the ACLU says a list kept by security personnel at Oakland Airport ran to 88 pages. Peace activists nationwide will combine commemorations of the August 1945 U.S. atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki with protests against the Bush administration's proposal to develop new, low-yield nuclear weapons. More than 50 events in over 30 U.S. cities are planned in the upcoming week, including workshops, rallies, concerts, and Japanese lantern floating as a traditional memorial for the dead. On Monday, August 6, 1945, an atomic bomb nicknamed Little Boy was dropped from a B-29 bomber and detonated over the Japanese city of Hiroshima. 3 days later, an even larger bomb, called Fat Man, was exploded over Nagasaki. In two cities, 215,000 people were incinerated instantly or died from injuries that year, and thousands more have died since from radiation poisoning, according to statistics from the A-bomb WWW project of Hiroshima. Japan quickly sued for peace, and World War II ended. Today, the administration's plans to develop new, low-yield, earth-penetrating nuclear weapons aimed at destroying underground bunkers in conventional wars is a development that has many activists worried. Such a program would be contrary to the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty and in violation of Article 6 of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, they say. This is the most dangerous U.S. administration in history. The Bush administration is promoting the use of nuclear weapons and practicing a disastrous foreign policy. Frankly, I'm terrified, said Max Abuzowski, Media Outreach Coordinator for American Friends Service Committee. The count of nuclear weapons in Iraq is zero. For the U.S., it is 33,000 and rising. Six Muslim and Arab American groups asked a federal court yesterday to strike down a key section of the USA Patriot Act, filing the first constitutional challenge to the sweeping new powers that Congress gave the Justice Department the month after the attacks of September 11, 2001. The lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court in Detroit challenges a provision of the counterterrorism law that increased the FBI's access to records and personal belongings with the permission of a secret federal court in Washington. The groups, a mix of large, national, and smaller local organizations, charge the expanded powers violate the First Amendment guarantee of free speech, the Fourth Amendment ban of unreasonable searches, and the Fifth Amendment right to due process. The challenge provision gives the FBI power to obtain the most private records of innocent people without anybody ever knowing about it, says Michael J. Steinberg of the American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan, one of the attorneys that filed the lawsuit. There is no need to prove the person whose records are sought is suspected of doing anything wrong, Steinberg says. This is having a tremendous chilling effect on the Muslim community. U.S. military casualties from the occupation of Iraq have been more than twice the number most Americans have been led to believe because of an extraordinarily high number of accidents, suicides, and other non-combat deaths in the ranks that have been largely unreported in the media. Since May 1st, when President Bush declared the end of major combat operations, 52 American soldiers have been killed by hostile fire, according to Pentagon figures quoted in almost all war coverage, but the total number of U.S. deaths from all causes is much higher, 112. The other unreported cost of war for the U.S. is the number of American wounded, 827 since Operation Iraqi Freedom began. Two U.S. Army soldiers belonging to the 1st Battalion, 22nd Infantry Regiment of the 4th Infantry Division are taken away for medical evacuation after a remote-controlled explosive device hit their vehicle in the city of Tikrit, about 180 kilometers northwest of Baghdad, on Saturday, August 2, 2003. In all, three men were injured. Unofficial figures are in the thousands. About half have been injured since the president's triumphant appearance on board the aircraft carrier USS Lincoln at the beginning of May. Many of the wounded have lost limbs. The figures are politically sensitive. The numbers of American combat deaths since the start of the war is 166, 19 more than the death toll in the first Gulf War. That's all for headlines. The headlines this week were taking off commondreams.org and the UCIMC Newswire. Up next is PRWatch.org's PR Watch Radio Spin of the Week.
With this week's edition of the Radio Weekly Spin, I'm Laura Miller. The New York Times reports, when the House voted last week to let Americans import less expensive medicines from Canada and Europe, 53 senators signed a letter opposing the legislation, a letter that the industry trade group, which vigorously opposed the measure, hailed as proof of its argument that the bill would jeopardize patient safety. The Times' Cheryl Gay Stolberg writes, what the trade group, the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers Association, did not say at the time was that it helped coordinate the signature campaign. The trade group's involvement in gathering signatures, detailed in a document obtained by the Times, is not a surprise. It offers a glimpse into the aggressive efforts by the pharmaceutical manufacturers to defeat the import provision. Pharma, one of Washington's most influential lobbying groups, has a record of hiding its lobbying activities, often by paying other organizations to promote its interests. With nearly 100 lobbyists registered in Washington to represent its interests last year, pharma is angering many lawmakers. Representative Gil Gutkenek, the Minnesota Republican who is the chief sponsor of the drug importation measure, told the Times, this is a multi-armed octopus we're dealing with. Referring to the trade group, Mr. Gutkenek added, all roads lead to pharma. Sludge researchers, activists, and rural residents exposed to land-applied sewage sludge across the nation are boycotting a summit organized by the Environmental Protection Agency, the Sludge Industry Trade Association Water Environment Research Foundation, and the New England Biosolids and Residuals Association. Activists say, we are boycotting this conference because its real purpose is to create an illusion that EPA and the sludge industry are concerned about people getting sick from sludge spreading. Organizers have arranged this conference while continuing to malign and intimidate scientists and citizens who raise concerns about land application of sewage sludge. PR Week reports, the Department of Justice is going on the offensive against critics of the U.S. Patriot Act. Civil liberties advocates criticized the legislation for removing checks on law enforcement and undermining constitutional rights, prompting some state and local governments to pass resolutions condemning the act. PR Week writes, Attorney General John Ashcroft and department spokespeople are now aggressively speaking out to the public and the press with an eye towards setting the record straight. Ashcroft used a trip last week to Alaska, one of the states to pass a resolution against the act, as an opportunity to speak out on the issue. He said it was understandable that the public would be concerned about invasions of privacy, but countered, we use these tools to secure the liberties of our citizens. We use these tools to save innocent lives. The American Civil Liberties Union, however, says that insufficient surveillance powers were not the reason government failed to detect terrorist activities that led to the 9/11 attacks. Laura W. Murphy, director of the ACLU's Washington Legislative Office, says, The congressional report on 9/11 shows that these new powers were not needed and that instead the government must effectively use those already at its disposal. The Miami Herald reports journalists in Guatemala have recently been attacked, one fatally, by mobs supporting former dictator Rios Montt, who is campaigning to become the country's president. Mario Antonio Sandoval, vice president of the daily Prensa Libre and president of the six-month-old cable channel Guatevision, said, "The press is the only functioning institution in this country. That is why they either have to control it or scare it." For these stories and more, visit the PR Watch website at www.prwatch.org.
Up next, there was an IMC benefit party that was held at the Espresso Royale on Oregon Street in Urbana last Friday. I went there with a mini-disc recorder and I got a little bit of something for you guys at home.
I cannot sing a single note, and I suck at playing chords. That's why I'm here in Hollywood at the MTV Music Awards.
Last Friday, August 1st, there was a benefit party at Espresso Royale Cafe on Oregon Street in Urbana to benefit the Independent Media Center.
My parents were both millionaires, and they worked for RCA, and they took their boss for sushi. That's how I got here today.
The lineup was to include DJs, a live music performance, and poetry readings, as well as an after-hours party. When the band originally scheduled to play didn't show, the IMC's own Paul Kottheimer took the stage with his guitar to play some tracks off of his new CD, Serious Folking Music, which is his own fundraiser for the Independent Media Center.
Can I ever say something about the IMC? The IMC got formed here in Urbana at the end of the year 2000 with a group of people who were dedicated to bringing media activism to focus locally. We started out by making some radio programs that were aired. Fortunately, we already had a community radio station, WVFT, here in town. And so we had an outlet right away for media that we produced for broadcast on the radio. From there, we expanded into a space in downtown Urbana, 218 West Main, which is a wonderful place with a reading room and lending library, some production facilities, and a gallery space in the back. Maybe some of you have heard about some of the iffy, sketchy things that have happened with the problems that we've had over at the main space. But that has turned out all for the positive, because now we have a benefit going on right here. Simultaneously, there's a show going on right down the way at the Channing Murray. We're doing a lot of outreach to the Campus Town area, which is all you faces here. So I think it turned out for the best. We've been doing it for about 2.5 years now, and we're just going to keep on doing it. Urge everyone in town who's interested in independent media production, and that means a democratic voice that can be broadcast, unlike what you'll see when you flip on cable television and the crawl line comes across the screen, you know, watch and obey. You don't have to do that. You can make your own media right here in town. We've got a community radio station. We've got community television. We've got several independent newspapers. Get involved.
I am a snowflake, and though I know that rightfully you could pun that last syllable, I'll retain the title. I am a snowflake.
The benefit also included two poetry readings, the first of which by Katie Richardson.
I am a web with a million passages and roadways. I am a map of a self-contained universe. Hell, I'm even an organic breath mint with the capacity to freeze any tongue. You are just a boot with a blockish rubber sole. Yesterday, when you stepped on me, I almost split in two, but then realized, though you may consider yourself a very stylish shoe, there is a factory that makes others just like you, and I am of the snow. If you had wanted to look closely, oh, but wait, no, I had forgotten. Your dense, stomping black sole blocks your eyelids from any downward view. However, if you could examine me, you would see a flake, yes, but also a naturally occurring crystallized maze with a complex pathway of very potent light. And even if I do break underneath the weight of your soul, I am the first and only, even underneath the weight of your soul.
I didn't get to stick around for the after-hours party, nor did I have time to catch comments from the crowd. But all in all, it seemed like a pretty successful event. Thanks out to Paul Kotheimer and Katie Richardson for letting me air their material, and thanks to everybody who attended. For IMC Radio News, this is Sam.
Now me, I spent my childhood in a video game. At Air Force Pilot Flying School, they said it'd be just the same, but now I got the blues. Those old civilian casualties blue. I got the Kandahar lullaby, daisy cutting red, white, and blue.
As we head into the last 10 minutes of IMC Radio News, we have a syndicated news show out of Canada called Auntie Bee's Knees.
Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of August 4th. In a bizarre twist on the meaning of the phrase information economy, the U.S. military revealed a plan last week to launch a stock market trading and speculations on potential terrorist attacks. Less than 2 days after news about the project was made public, the U.S. Department of Defense announced cancellation of the program. Now the project's leader, John Poindexter, is set to resign amid the controversy. The proposed stock market for terrorism was dubbed the Policy Analysis Market and was being pursued as part of the Futures Markets Applied to Prediction, or Future Map, initiative of the Information Awareness Office under the Defense Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, the Central Research and Development Organization for the U.S. Department of Defense. Future Map sought to explore opportunities for adapting market-based systems of information gathering and analysis to the uses of military intelligence agencies. The Policy Analysis Market was a joint project of DARPA and two private companies, NetExchange, a market technologies company that wrote the program used to manage the market, and the Economist Intelligence Unit, the business information arm of the publisher of The Economist magazine. The Policy Analysis Market would have allowed traders to profit by correctly predicting assassinations, political coups, and missile attacks in the Middle East and elsewhere. The market would operate like other financial markets, with investors buying futures in the terrorist attacks they think are likely to happen and selling off futures in events they believe are less likely to occur. Bidders would profit if the terrorist attacks for which they held futures actually happened, much the same way a commodities trader benefits by predicting corn yields or sales of hog bellies. Holders of a futures contract that came true would collect the proceeds of traders who put money into the market but made incorrect predictions. DARPA argued that the information provided by the Policy Analysis Market would allow the U.S. military to predict and therefore prevent terrorist attacks. According to DARPA, quote, futures markets have proven themselves good at predicting such things as election results. They are often better than expert opinions, end quote. DARPA did not describe how the U.S. Department of Defense might respond to heated activity in the terrorist futures market, nor could the agency explain how payouts to investors in the aftermath of an attack might deter potential terrorists. In fact, the program would have offered an opportunity for terrorists themselves to profit from carrying out successful attacks, though the maximum gain from such trade would be limited to less than $100 per investor. As of last Monday, the first phase of the project had gone online thanks to a couple of $100,000 in taxpayer money. The website policyanalysismarket.org announced that the market would be trading futures contracts on events such as the overthrow of the King of Jordan, the assassination of Yasser Arafat, or a missile attack by North Korea. The site was scheduled to begin a beta test on August 1st, launching registration for potential investors and offering examples of policy experts making trades in the system. In a section describing how to become a trader on the website, potential investors were told, quote, "Whatever a prospective trader's interest, involvement in this group should prove engaging and may prove profitable," end quote. The market would initially be limited to 1,000 traders, increasing to at least 10,000 by January 1st. The website did not address how much money investors would be likely to put into the market, but said that participants would be motivated by the prospect of profit and pain of loss to make accurate predictions. Potential traders would be able to participate simply by choosing a username and password, resting assured that DARPA would not have access to their identities or funds. This opened the possibilities that terrorists themselves could drive up the market for an event they were planning and profit from an attack, or make false bets to mislead intelligence authorities. And although U.S. government agencies would not be allowed to participate in the market directly, there would be no way to prevent information leaks to potential investors. The online wagering was set to begin October 1st, and the Defense Department had requested $8 million for FutureMap to expand the policy analysis market over the next 2 years. News of the project was greeted with harsh criticism from both Democrat and Republican senators in the U.S. Last Monday, Senator Ron Wyden, a staunch opponent of DARPA's Terrorism Information Awareness Program, and Senator Byron Dorgan, a member of the Senate Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, called for an immediate end to the project in a letter to DARPA. Dorgan and Wyden announced that they would be fighting against any funding for such a program, arguing that, quote, "spending taxpayer dollars to create terrorism betting parlors is as wasteful as it is repugnant. The American people want the federal government to use its resources enhancing our security, not gambling on it," end quote. Senator Tom Daschle said he believed the plan would create an incentive to commit acts of terrorism. Hillary Clinton described it as a futures market in death, and Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Pat Roberts called the program absurd. Majority Leader Bill Frist asked Appropriations Committee Chairman Ted Stevens and Armed Services Chairman John Warner to ensure that the project would not be funded. On Tuesday, Warner and Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz announced that the entire FutureMap program would be abandoned. At the press conference, Warner described the policy analysis market as a serious mistake by DARPA. By Wednesday, the website had been taken down. Senators Dorgan and Wyden responded warmly to this news, but added that the outrage should fuel momentum to cut off funding to the entire terrorism information awareness effort, of which FutureMap was just a small part. The senators also called for the firing or resignation of John Poindexter, responsible for developing FutureMap and the policy analysis market, in his role as director of DARPA's Information Awareness Office. Poindexter is a retired Rear Admiral from the U.S. Navy. In the 1980s, he held a number of military advisory roles in the White House before being appointed as National Security Advisor under President Ronald Reagan. Poindexter was removed from this position after being convicted of conspiracy, lying to Congress, defrauding the U.S. government, and destroying evidence in the Iran-Contra Arms for Hostages scandal. Poindexter was also accused of raising funds for the Contras through cocaine trafficking, though this allegation was never brought to trial. Nonetheless, the only reason that Poindexter has been running a government agency rather than rotting behind bars is that he was granted immunity in 1991 for his testimony at the Iran-Contra investigation. In the 1990s, Poindexter returned to the private sector, co-founding a software company called TP Systems and working as a consultant for government defense contractor Elkins Group before taking a job as the vice president of Information Systems at Syntec Technologies in 1996. Syntec is a government contractor with close ties to DARPA, the CIA, the U.S. Navy, and U.S. Department of Defense. The company's commercial clients include most of America's largest weapons manufacturers, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, Litton, Northrop Grumman, and Raytheon. While at Syntec, Poindexter helped to develop Genoa, a system designed to secretly explore and extract information from large computer databases. The program is currently being used by DARPA's Information Awareness Office, of which Poindexter is the director. Poindexter was appointed to the post on February 2002, shortly after the Information Awareness Office was launched by DARPA as part of the U.S. government's war on terrorism. Soon, Poindexter found himself at the center of controversy surrounding his proposal for the Total Information Awareness Project, a sweeping electronic surveillance plan to prevent terrorism by tapping into computer databases and collecting individuals' credit, financial, medical, travel, and other personal records. After critics targeted the project's potential for invasions of privacy, the U.S. Department of Defense trimmed funding for the program and changed its name from Total Information Awareness to Terrorism Information Awareness. That was just a few months ago. Now, facing further criticism for planting the seeds of the policy analysis market, Poindexter is counting the days until he can ditch the U.S. Department of Defense and go sailing at Chesapeake Bay. On Thursday, the Pentagon announced that Poindexter will be resigning from his position at DARPA within several weeks. While Poindexter had supervisory responsibility for the policy analysis market, others within DARPA and the Defense Department also played important roles shaping or approving the project. As yet, there is no word on their fate or that of employees working on future MAP projects. The future of the larger Information Awareness Office is also unclear. And amid all the finger-pointing, controversy, and debate, some critics are pointing out that markets trading in the same kind of futures speculation proposed by the policy analysis market are already flourishing in the private sector and being monitored by military intelligence agencies. Sites like Ireland's Tradesports.com take bets on the fortunes of Saddam Hussein as well as those of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And according to some economists, such predictions can be very accurate when participants' dollars are involved. As it turns out, speculation markets trading in information are actually quite successful at predicting non-financial outcomes and events. The best-known example is the Iowa Electronic Markets, a system set up in 1988 at the University of Iowa as a way to examine the behavior of markets. The system has since successfully predicted the outcome of every presidential election. Professor Richard Roll used the price of frozen orange juice futures to predict the weather in Florida more accurately than meteorologists, and an artificial market at Hewlett-Packard, which compiled sales estimates of select employees, beat the company's official sales forecast 15 out of 16 times. These types of examples set the stage for DARPA's experiment in placing defense policy on the market. And really, given the interdependence of the U.S. economy, military, and government, it comes as little surprise that the state would be funding research into market-based military strategies for conducting surveillance and preemptive military actions while helping some investors to turn a profit. After all is said and done, it appears that to the U.S. military, at least, there is little distinction between keeping the sun shining over Florida orange groves and sending U.S. soldiers into countries that the stock markets deem a threat. Signing off, this is Anti Beasney's reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.
That wraps up today's program. Thanks to everybody who listened, and don't forget to check in next Monday for next week's edition of IMC Radio News.
We've been doing it for about 2.5 years now, and we're just going to keep on doing it.